Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Fantastic. This is the halfway. Tomorrow you turn the page for your second half of peace of mind. And to help you do that, we've devised just an hour together. And Sister Manda, who is based in the Global Retreat Centre in Oxford in the UK and is very well travelled and very experienced in teaching and especially communicating some of the more unique parts of the Brahma Kumaris information. And tonight we'll talk about the culture of where we all came from as an organisation. And it's a very interesting story and involves, of course, Brahma Baba. And many of you who have come here for the first time, you've heard the Brahma Kumaris has no gurus, and there are 10 feet for paintings of Brahma Baba everywhere. So we want to share why we have these. And connected to that is the history of the story of a very small organisation of people in British India in the 1930s. And Manda and I see Manda very much as my sister and good mate. And Manda has a different level of insight. And hearing the stories, especially the times that she spent in close connection with Daddy Janki, who was an Encyclopedia Britannica on stories, and just out of the blue, Daddy will talk about 70 years ago as if it was yesterday. So, would you like to?
Yes, Brahma Baba plays a very significant and a very important role for me. Because when I started with the Brahma Kumaris, in fact, when I learned about the Brahma Kumaris, I was 19. And my mother had started meditating at the time. And you know what mothers are like. If the mothers are doing something, children's got to be part of that. So it was a bit like, you're going to do this. And, you know, this picture of Brahma Baba arrived in our household. And I'm saying, but why do you have this picture? And she kind of fumbled her way out of it. But initially, I was not understanding that they're saying that God is incorporeal, and then here's this picture that they're putting in our home. You know, we had no physical relationship with this person, and this picture arrived. But interestingly enough, when I started to become more open and started to understand, first and foremost, I think the concept of the Supreme, Divine, God, whatever it is that we want to call it, I think my understanding of Brahma Baba and his role came from that understanding more. That it's not that I understood Brahma Baba first, I understood God, I understood the incorporealness, the subtlety of who the Supreme is and how that one's role has to be so apparent and obvious in my life, and how it is that Brahma Baba helps me bridge that gap. And so really, interestingly enough, I've never met him physically, but I feel like I know him. And I feel like he knows me. And this is it makes me feel extremely close and a sense of belonging that I've never felt with anybody, probably in my whole life, this particular time around. And so it's a very interesting thing, I think. And I think that happens because of the role that he plays. What it is that he does. When I understood the philosophy of the Brahma Kumaris, which all of you here are learning about the soul, about the Supreme, about the philosophy of karma. And really in this I mean, you haven't learned this. Your topic for the drama, world drama, is tomorrow. And I think that that's a very significant thing, and that how us, as spiritual being, here on this physical plane, and our how it is that we learn to interact with this world of matter, but through matter, with ourselves and with each other. And I think this is where Brahmabha plays a very significant role for me, where he becomes the intermediary, because his love for God and his role, I understand that everybody here knows that Brahmabha, we see Brahmabha as an instrument, as a channel, as someone who actually brings forth the quality of God. A, because of his own recognition of God, but recognizing the role that he plays in being able to receive the energy of God. And so for us to make that accessible, and how it is that he brought that in his own life. So that's why Brahmabha plays a very important role for me. When people say, you know, especially here in India, you see 10 foot, must be more.
At least, yeah.
The size. And you see his picture everywhere and you think, why? And I just say, well, hey, you're in India. And everything is so, you know, have you smelt anything so stronger than the smells that you smell here? Have you tasted anything stronger than what you taste here? Have you seen colors brighter than colors that you
never,
see here?
Never.
So it's the same thing. The principle is the same.
In your face, basically.
It's very apparent. Everything is very there, present for you. And so while Brahmabha is not God, Brahmabha is not someone whom we call our guru. In fact, the relationship that's really special is that he's our spiritual father.
That's the best way to describe
him. I think that's the best way to describe him. But also I think the reason why, for me actually, you know, that you, whenever you see a picture of Brahmabha, you'll always see a little point up there. And you think, well, that's so small and this is so big. But in reality also, how do you ever depict the smallest, the most subtlest, and yet most profound spiritual energy in our universe in a physical way? You can't. You really just can't. Because it's just not possible, because it's just so subtle. And Brahmabha brought that through his eyes. For me, I like having a picture of Brahmabha in front of me when I meditate, because his eyes, it's his eyes.
Mm.
I'm not remembering him, I'm not thinking of him, and yet his image, his eyes take me beyond. It's like I travel into this other dimension as I look into his eyes, and I find myself in this space that is endless, that is subtle, that is incredibly quiet.
Because Brahmabha didn't like having his photo taken.
No.
Believe it or not. He asked the children, he said, that you do not get the inheritance of peace and love and the wealth of knowledge from me. I am also a student.
Yeah, that's right.
And however, there were 100,000 photos of Brahmabha with everyone, and many of the along the back here we mentioned on the first night, a lot of these photos of the original generation of the Brahma Kumaris, they would all say that it is Shiv Baba who gives the benefit. It is Shiv Baba who's created this university. And through, because God, Shiv Baba, doesn't have a body of his own, he has to borrow one. And because none of the Westerners that will talk about Brahmabha ever met him. I never met him. And when I first went into the centre, Brother Charlie, who's just arrived, he's here. He invited me to come to meet Daddy Janki. When I walked into this tiny little centre in NW10 in London before lots of big buildings now in London and Oxford and all over Europe. There was a black and white photo of Brahma Baba. And I asked one of the sisters, I said, who is this? And she just said, oh, that is your father. And walked away. And Brother Joe and I, we had lost our father, our own physical father, when we were 7 years old. And Mum never remarried. So we grew up without a father. So my first step on the journey of spirituality was to see a photo of him. And then there's a description of God as your father. And I remember sitting in meditation thinking, I walked in an orphan, now I've got two fathers. Anyway, but maybe just going back a little to connect why Brahma Baba. Why is he such a valuable part of our BK life? And it's in the mid-30s, the late-30s, that he started to receive visions and very, very deep and profound spiritual experiences. And he was a family man. He was married. He had 5 kids and lived in Calcutta, which was the headquarters of British India, and where 100,000 British ruled over 300 million Indians until they met Mahatma Gandhi and decided to leave India. But if you, the film Gandhi, has anyone seen that film? Yeah. Think of that time of non-violent resistance to foreign rule of India. And that was the time of the development of the Brahma Kumaris. But in the beginning, there was just him. Brahma Baba had visions, and Joe and I had a few hours with Brahma Baba's only son, living son, just about 2 years ago. He lived in Bombay, and he told us the most wonderful, humane, personal stories about his father. And he said what he noticed was his father losing interest in business, because he had a very successful jewelry business. He was known as a designer, and we have actually met one of the customers of Dadalek Raja's jewelry business, and this fellow described him as the Cartier of India. He was well known for two things: design of jewelry, and also being able to assess the value of diamonds, especially, but all the jewels he used in his business. And he only employed teachers as his salespeople, because they were educated, they spoke English, and they were honest. So he had the story was that he withdrew his interest gradually and became more interested in spirituality. And then, and I won't go into the details, but Manda may know some more stories than I, but he ultimately returned to Hyderabad in what is... it's about 60 miles north of Karachi, which was their ancestral home, and where all these daddies and daddas that are behind you are all from, mostly, or in that Sindh province. And he felt more inclined to focus on spirituality and basically sold his business and then created a community called, and it became known as Om Mandali.
Just to backtrack a little bit, what I think was very fascinating actually was that he was, during this time when he started to become pulled to a more spiritual inclination, and he would kind of find himself in a trance state, and some of these ideas that would come to him that were very alien to him. He was a devout Hindu. He was very learned. He was studying the Gita profusely. He had a ritual in which he would study the Gita every single day before he went to work and so on, and a lot of love for the deities and all of these things. And so, as devout a Hindu as you can get, really. But yet, when he started to find himself pulled into a state of silence and in a semi-trance state, where he would draw images of some of these ideas that were coming to him, And this is what you learn about now, actually, some of the philosophies of Raja Yoga that you learn about came through initially in that way, where he would draw circles, he would draw swastikas, and he didn't understand what this meant until he went and spent some amount of time in silence and evaluated some of these things and came to an understanding. So just imagine, though, that, and actually many of the ideas that you learn here, people say to us, are you Hindus? And it's a bit odd to say, well, no, not really. And we're not really Hindus because, you know, Hinduism is a religion. It is a way of life. And it's, in a sense, a lifestyle that descends from that deity religion, that divine religion that did exist. So, but, as you know, with everything, as time goes on, you know, the real meaning and significance, it gets lost because we get so caught up in our physical world. So some of the ideas that you learn here are very different to Hinduism. And I don't know if it's kind of become explicitly clear, one of which is that for us, God is not omnipresent. God is a spiritual being, just like I'm a spiritual being. We're two separate entities, and all of us are separate entities, spiritual beings, and we all come from the same place, that home, a spiritual home. And so for him to work all of these things out, and you know, actually, if you ask, you will understand, or when you get a chance to, you don't get to understand the whole depth and breadth of the understanding of some of the spiritual ideas, because there just isn't the time to do it here, right? But it's incredibly powerful to have this recognition that the soul, the supreme soul, the home of the soul, this physical world, they're all separate energies, separate entities. Whereas in Hinduism, it's all mixed. It's all, sometimes it's one thing, some will say it's one thing, others will say it's something else. So there's all of these kinds of mixture. Yet Brahma Baba's understanding, the philosophy here that was taught, absolutely clear. Exactly the same. Everybody will explain the same thing to you. And so these things, he had to work them out.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst being, in a sense, a Hindu and reading scriptures that are saying one thing, but his understanding is taking him somewhere else. And actually, for all of us, though, I know for my own self, as I grow spiritually, as I become more subtle, as I tap into the real experience of myself as a spiritual being, as in a sense, the offspring, in perfect image of the Supreme Being, I begin to understand the subtlety of all of these things. Not because somebody told me. What someone tells me just acts as a trigger to practice something. But when I really do experience and practice and assess, then I come to a place that's unique and very subtle. And so Brahma Baba had to figure all that out for himself. And then be able to articulate it to the rest of the ones that were sitting in front of him. And often they didn't get what he was saying, but they sensed the vibe, they sensed the energy.
And this is what happened in the tradition of what Manda said about Hinduism. To get a vision of it, which is often a name of a devotional path, to get a vision of Krishna or of Vishnu or any of the what was happening as the as Brahma Baba. Well, they called him Om Baba at that time. And he had one of these really, couple of these big houses in Hyderabad. And they would chant Om. So the place became, Om Mandali became is the house that chants Om. And the community started of gathering. Well, again, the Sindhi people are often related to each other in a way from a Western perspective. We understand and see the Jewish community, very close-knit, very in business together often. And so what Baba was doing was just chanting Om in the mornings, and people gradually would come. And as Brahma would look, Om Baba would look at these people, they would go into a trance-like state and see Krishna in front of them. And this is impossible to see. They would walk in, sit down, off they'd go. And many people, these are the stories that we had. And the community started getting from just a few to dozens and dozens. And then I think it got up to about 600 or 700 of people. They'd heard, you go to Om Baba, go to Om Mandali, you'll see Krishna. And people did.
Mm.
And the one thing, as the mist maybe started to leave Brahma Baba's intellect, he started to be aware that there was some power that was granting these visions. He knew one thing, that it wasn't him doing it, because he didn't have this power before, did he?
That's right. So, he was very aware that there's something pulling him, something that is working through him. And all these people would come, and really, actually, they felt that they had come in front of God. He never claimed himself to be God, but they felt that they were coming to God. And it was not possible for them to distinguish between this ordinary man and these incredibly, deeply profound spiritual experiences they were having. And Brahma Baba himself really didn't clearly know what was going on at that time. Mm. It's only with time that he began to really understand that, well, he is who he is, just an ordinary human being, but there's something else that's working through him. And there were specific times where there would be a sense of a presence. And that was specifically when he was explaining, when understanding was coming through him. At that time, they would feel that there's another presence. There's something else that's working through him. And for him also, it was as if something is taking over. It's not him. Because he didn't know. He didn't consciously know some of these ideas that were coming through him. And so just imagine the puzzlement in his own life and for himself of what was going on. And yet, he had a wife, he had children, daughters that were married, and the sons, I think they were not married. Dada Narayan got married afterwards. They were not married. And then his own wife began to see him not as her husband anymore. It was as if there was someone else. And because he felt that he was taking on a different role, and he realized actually through visions that he had to be an instrument. And think about this for a moment. Instrument to change this world of hell into a world of heaven. Now I'm using these words as he understood those words at the time. But if we think about it for our own selves even, to change the world, and it was as if something is telling him, it is you, and you are the one who is the instrument. You are the one who's got to change and become a divine being of the future. And, I mean, for us, we've been, all of us, everybody, for us, the understanding very much that when the soul and the body have a pure relationship, when we begin to understand our own relationship with matter, our own relationship with this physical body, and make it pure, make it divine, then we ourselves become divine beings. And it takes time for us to still grasp it. Sometimes we lose sight of that, thinking, me? Become that? And yet Brahma Baba, when he got it. And he had to get it for the rest of us to get it.
Mm.
If he didn't get it, God or anybody can tell you whatever they want, as much as they want. But if they don't have, they're not sitting with absolute and complete faith and conviction of what's coming out of their mouth, there is no marriage between these words and the life that they're living. So this information that's coming through Brahma Baba, this information, really he had to take ownership of it. And he did. So when he spoke and he looked at people as souls, you're a soul. People had the experience because he saw them. He felt that for himself, and then he saw them as that. equally, you are divine beings. You are the future deities of this world. If he didn't have that consciousness for himself, there is no way he would be able to translate that for us and give us this sense. And it wasn't about the physical aspects, but this pure energy of incredible harmony, purity, beauty, simplicity. He had to embody that.
That's the point. That was the difference. In traditional Hindu, what little I know about that religion, is that you bow down to the qualities of the divine beings, whatever deity is worshipped. But what Brahma Baba, what the message was coming through, instead of worshipping Krishna, for instance, you become like Krishna. You bring these qualities, these virtues, into your life. And over this period, and again, Brahma Baba began to really feel that his life's direction was different to what it was going to be, and he established a trust and willed all his wealth to this Om Mandali, which was a committee of mothers and young girls.
All under the age of 18.
Yeah.
All under the age of 18.
And they were now in charge, and Mama, the first administrative head, her mother started hearing about Om Mandali, and her father, he got wiped out in the 1929 stock market crash and lost all his wealth. And his mother was, and then he had a heart attack and died, this guy. They were orphans, and she was a widow, which is not a good plight in India. And they'd heard about Om Mandali, so they came over to Hyderabad, and then Mama became involved, and she had such an intellect. She was in charge of this small group of families, really, and the numbers kept growing, and people were staying because they were finding something in Om Mandali that they couldn't find anywhere else. And even the daughters of wealthy people in India at that time were not educated. And here's Brahma Baba, you know, his wealth supported. They ended up having a community of 400 or thereabouts, and they eventually moved to Karachi because it was bigger and a lot more cosmopolitan and secular city than Hyderabad, because what he was doing was revolutionary. There were no women in charge of spiritual organizations at all, and unlikely to be. And that created a lot of challenge in the communities, but that's another story. And as they moved to Karachi, they had a few different buildings, and they had to set up a school because there were kids to educate. And those children became the daddies, the elders of the Brahma Kumaris, the original teachers. And then for 14 years, they were in an incubator away from society at the time of partition of India. So there was a civil war going on outside. But the chief minister, it was a Muslim part of India, and eventually became Pakistan, they were protected by the authorities and the civil. So there was all this mayhem and murder going on around them, but they were untouched. And then after India was partitioned, their relatives who moved to India, because they were Hindu, like you know Benazir Bhutto, the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, was assassinated. She was a Sindhi, but a Muslim Sindhi. The Brahma Kumaris elders were Sindhis, but they were Hindu Sindhis. So they ended up choosing Mount Abu to relocate. But for 14 years, it was Brahma Baba's money that supported 400 people. So you think about how much.
And
was.
Also for him, though, that what he did was that he handed over, in a sense, everything he had to these group of women. And so that he was now a trustee, and everybody else was
yes,
a trustee.
That's a good way to describe
and
it.
This was amazing. His own son, one of the reasons why one of his sons got a little bit upset was that he created a system. So his son kind of one day needed something, went to his father and said, I want this. He says, well, you need to go to so-and-so because she's looking after that aspect of things. And he was absolutely, didn't feel that he needed to do that because it was his father's income. It was his father's, everything that belonged to his father. And why should he have to go to someone else to ask for it? But Baba said, no. Brahma Baba said, it's not mine. It's now handed over. And these are the people that are looking after everything that's mine. So you have to go to them to ask for whatever it is that you want. Now that's quite something too. But I think what is very significant here, why it is that today Brahma Baba seems to play such a valuable role, is because he was that aspect that I just spoke about, that he felt, well, he played the role that he had to be embodying everything that was coming through his mouth in the moment that it was coming through his mouth. But also that how to implement some of these things that were coming through him. And he did that first for himself. He first lived those things, practiced those teachings and understanding so that he could that then become an example for other people. And the reason why he plays that important role for us is because he showed us this marriage between this absolute, spiritual, subtle, pure energy, how that energy has to come through this physical, through our own physical bodies, but in this world, and we have to manifest this in our own lives. And Brahma Baba did that so incredibly well. Firstly, through being a trustee of everything he owned, and inside himself, he practiced being bodiless. He practiced this, I mean, I don't know if this expression has come through to you yet in meditation, how to be in the body, but beyond the consciousness of the physical body. How to be relating to other people, but beyond the attraction of the physical, but yet with immense love. Immense love and immense sense of belonging and ownership. So it's not when we're saying, you know, attracted that we don't care or we should be just kind of discarding. It's not like that at all. The spiritual love that comes through is so profound that you don't feel that you're rejected. If you're feeling rejected, then obviously it's not being done in the right way. And he demonstrated all of these things. He demonstrated how to live the life of values and virtues. And that's why also he became an example for us, that intermediary. And I see him really like that, that there's the incorporeal, there's the absolute subtle, and here's the physical, completely gross and completely dense and gross, if you like. And then there's this individual that's working to blend these two worlds together. And when we bring these two worlds together, that's when this world becomes a world of truth, a world of heaven, if you like, and a world of purity, of love, of harmony, of truth, in a natural way. This is the other thing that Brahma Baba did. He made it all so natural and so easy for himself so that we could say, oh yeah, I can do this. And we also experience the dadis like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dadis, somebody was asking me today about the dadis, and this is what they did. You know, we never felt that we were seen as, you know, a package of complications and difficulties, which we all had, our personalities, our negativities or tendencies, all of these were there. But we were never seen. I'm sure we created obstacles and gave them a hard time, but we never felt that we gave them a hard time because they actually then, Brahma Baba did it for them and then they did it for us.
Mm.
And I think this is such a such an incredible thing. And this aspect of belonging, they created this feeling, you belong to me and I belong to you. Doesn't matter where you come from, Brahma Baba created that feeling for them. And I think the other thing to remember also with Brahma Baba is that when he used to speak, he was an incredible visionary. Incredible visionary. In those days, in the late 30s, where in India, women played the most secondary role. Women were not allowed to be educated. And yet, Brahma Baba saying, you, he said, all these young girls that were in front of him, he's saying to them, you are going to be the leaders of the world. You are going to bring God to the world. You are the future deities and divine beings. And for 14 years, they grew up. 14 years they spend with someone constantly showing them, that's who you are, that's who you are, that's who you are. And that he encouraged them to have that vision for each other as well. And so for them, it was like when they came out after those 14 years, the world was an alien world for them. They didn't know. When they first went out after those 14 years that Michael's talking about and they saw people smoking, they thought, what's this? This is a weird thing that people are doing. Is smoke coming out of people's mouths? What is this? They never experienced it. They never knew what it was. And so Brahma Baba kept them. That incubator really was an incubator for them. And he constantly taught them about spiritual practice. Go inside yourself. Study. Be introvert. Be introspective. Remember who you are. Remember who God is. Don't remember me. But because he taught them so much, he played the role. I know that for myself, for instance, Daddy Janki, hopefully you'll all get a chance to meet her. She's 103 now, quite frail, but we've kind of put it in her diary that maybe on the 9th evening she will come to meet you all and you will see. It's this incredible sense of profound love and a presence that's so subtle. And you feel as if you belong. And they learnt it from Brahma Baba. And now there's not many of them left now because one by one by one, they've kind of gone. I think there must be 3 or 4 left now.
Yeah, there were dozens and dozens when we first came.
When we came, there were a lot.
More.
Hundreds in the 80s.
Fast forward from this incubator period, they decided, a decision was made to come to Mount Abu.
That's right.
A number of you saw the Pandit Bhavan, the original complex. This morning, the other half that haven't seen it, we'll see it tomorrow. And once they established, they came to India, they had no money. The money had run out.
That's right. So
they entered what they referred to as their beggary period. And instead of, I won't focus too much on this because we could be here till next week telling the stories that we've heard. But this Brahma Baba taught the sisters how to strip a truck and how to set up electrical wiring in these new buildings they were building. And the brothers, the men were taught how to sew and how to cook. And so there is a term of the Brahma Kumaris turn men into women and women into men. And one of the great daddies who's still with us, Daddy Ratan Mohini, I'm not sure whether we'll meet her, but she showed us the other year the old wiring in the back of Pandit Bhavan. She said, I put this up. I did this and this daddy helped and we did this and we weren't going to be weak little things. And then Baba sent out sisters, young sisters. Daddy Janki, of course, was one of them. And others, just 2 or 3, to Delhi, to Nagpur, to Bombay, to Madras, to Calcutta, all over India with 20 rupees in their pocket.
Mm.
And their heart full of Brahma Baba's vision, and they started to establish centres, little places, through their family networks or however, and miracles happened. And as this role of service in the 50s and 60s rolled out across India, Brahma Baba said a strange thing. He said to them, you will have to learn English because the foreigners are coming.
Mm.
And this was when there was you know,
nobody.
Nobody. There was three centres in India, and 20 people would come to Madhuban and then to the headquarters. But Baba had this vision, and they thought, you know, maybe Baba's, you know, what do you mean foreigners come? It was hard enough for people of Hindu origin to accept the philosophy of the BKs. But in the early and mid-70s, Daddy Janki, who I think was on her deathbed at that stage, volunteered in 1974 to go to Africa and London. And she has, if you look up a definition of determination in the dictionary, you'll see a photo of Daddy Janki. And the fact that she was very ill, irrelevant. Let's go. And then she went to London, and international service just flourished. And then we walked in the door. How you going? And then, but this is, the organisation expanded, again, based on the vision of Brahma Baba.
And for that, I think I'll also add, Brahma Baba used to say, because for Baba, and just think about it for a moment, if Shiv Baba, the incorporeal, is working through him, then there cannot be a difference in the consciousness of Shiv Baba and the consciousness of Brahma Baba. If there was any discrepancies between these two, then you wouldn't be able to experience Shiv Baba through Brahma Baba. So the fact that Brahma Baba became the father of the people. Brahma Baba had the consciousness that these are my children and I am their father. So when Michael is talking about, you know, he didn't have his own physical father, but suddenly he comes to the Brahma Kumaris and he has two fathers. The incorporeal, Shiv Baba, and this one as the father. And Brahma Baba used to say, he would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and meditate. And actually this word meditation doesn't suit Brahma Baba, I think. Because he used to say, he does tapasya. Tapasya means intense meditation. It doesn't mean like you're gritting your teeth and, you know, kind of, that kind of intense. But there's this consistency in your meditation. There is consistency, there is power, there is the ability to stay so focused that the intensity is very strong. So he used to wake up 2 o'clock in the morning and he would say, I'm invoking my children from around the world.
Mm.
So this kind of sense is invocation that children will come. Children will come from around the world. And he used to say that there will be a queue from down Abu Road, which is, you must have passed through the complex, past the complex there. He used to say there will be a queue from Abu Road to Mount Abu. And you couldn't imagine. But now, when there's been group meetings of 25,000 people downstairs, you know, after the group meeting, trucks and cars that come, or the buses and cars that come, really almost it's like a queue from the bottom of the mountain to the top of the mountain. He used to say there'll be centers in every street around in India. And perhaps not every street, but you go to Bombay and you'll find 100 centers in Bombay. Or you go to Delhi and there'll be 100 centers in Delhi. So his vision of what will be, not because of like force and make it happen, but he just knew that there is such need and thirst for this truth of spirituality, that the only saving grace for mankind at the end of the day is going to be this. And I think that I know for myself that spirituality, you know, there is so much in our world today. Ask many of the people and here they'll say, well, they didn't come looking for God, but they did come looking for truth. And truth and God, for me, now, are synonymous. They are synonymous. Whether you call God, you call truth, well, there's a whole conversation to be had about that as well. But truth, the ultimate truth of not facts and information, truth, the vibration and the energy of absoluteness, the vibration and the energy of purity, of cleanliness, of knowing, of connectedness, of simplicity and beauty. This is who we are. This is who God is. This is what Brahma Baba demonstrated in life, in reality. Mm. So we could almost touch it. You could almost touch it, see it, feel it, and taste it. And this is what we attempt to do for ourselves in our own lives in meditation, and then offer that to other people as part of our service. And so yes, we sometimes can become too good at talking too much. But really for me, the sense that age is now changing. And I was telling Michael yesterday, as we were talking about for today, that there is this knowledge and understanding, and there's the experience. And there's this in between, what we now have to articulate. And I think Brahma Baba did that through his own practice and vibration and energy, is this phase of what is between knowledge and experience. It's that language that we have to articulate so that people get it and they say, yeah, I can do this. I want to do this. I am this.
On the 18th of January 1969, Brahma Baba passed away, and he willed his spiritual possessions to Daddy Prakashmani, whose photo is here on both sides. And she was a very young girl to be in charge of such an organization. That was more than 50 years ago. And here we are talking about Brahma Baba to you. Such was the vision, such was the inspiration that he passed on. Nothing was impossible.
Mm.
Nothing was impossible. And that's what my personal inspiration, because I fell in love when I first met this fellow. He's such a good looking bloke. Again, I thought he was a guru for a short time. But I thought he didn't have a long beard and hair and was unassailable. But we've heard through many of the relationships he had that we call the daddies, and there were a few dadders, and they just spoke to him about him as a human being, not a guru, not a perfect person. He became that. And since that time in 1969, the Brahma Kumaris as an organization has exploded. We went from, when I first came in 75, there were 200 centres and 20,000 BKs or something like that, and now there's more than 1 million BKs, 8,000 centres across India, we're in 130 odd countries. I mean, this is, it's bigger than Citibank. I mean, it's just the most amazing spiritual distribution network, all volunteers. Everyone that serves you a meal, gives a class, makes your bed, are all volunteers. We don't make money out of this. I mean, this is... I'll leave it to you. And we're just getting close to the hour, and we're going to have some historical meditation. We're going to finish with a song that's from close to 100 years ago. One song they used to play when the children in the school, the old Mandalay school, they'd sleep in a big dormitory, and they'd come and put the mosquito nets over and made sure that they were okay. And Mama and Baba, they would play this song. And it's many of the Indian people here would instantly know the singer, Lata Mangeshkar. I can never get her name
right. Lata Mangeshkar.
Mangeshkar is the most famous singer in India and Pakistan. And these songs were used in films. And this one is called Sojo Rajakumari, which you translated better than I could.
It means princess go to sleep.
Yeah.
And Brahma Baba used to treat them as, you know, they all came, all the ones that came, those 300-400 that came, they came from... most of them came from a very well-off background, quite wealthy families. So they were really lived in their own homes with princes and princesses. Mm. And when they came to Baba, Baba didn't treat them any different. And now Baba really said to them, you are the future deities, you are the future princes and princesses. And he reminded them of that. So the way he dressed them, the way he fed them, the way he loved them, all of that was like that. And so at the end of the day, before they went to bed, he would play this song, Soja Rajkumari, Soja, so princess, go to sleep. There's so much in a sense to share, but
too much.
I think this is kind of probably enough. But I think just the one thing that I would share, I've lived in a retreat center for 25 odd years, and in England, it was the first retreat center. In fact, it was the first residential accommodation facility outside of India in the early 90s. And when we first got the place, it's actually quite a beautiful place in terms of location. It's an 18th century Palladian villa, and it's a listed building, has 70 bedrooms. I'm telling you that just to give you a context for what I'm about to say, not to show off or anything, but it was a place that was in receivership, and it was just ideal for us. So anyway, we got it for a small amount of money. So because it was outside of India, people think, well, India is one thing, but outside of India, and people said to us, but you are going to have to charge if you're going to, you know, run this place, this huge house, you're going to have to charge. And we, of course, connected with Mount Abu here, Madhuban, the dadis who used to at the time go into trance and bring messages. We were told, no, you will not charge for anything. And you know, over the years, I see that Brahma Baba was incredibly, incredibly insightful and clever and smart in so many different ways. One was that all of us are volunteers, not just because we've got nothing else to do and it's a nice place to hang out and let's go to the Brahma Kumaris and do some good work and live there. But what he wanted, what it brings, is this energy of love, of an offering that's not possible to actually put a monetary value on. There's no way you can place a monetary value on what's being offered out of love. You people go to retreats and this nowadays so much, they pay thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars for retreats. That was one thing. And so people are available. Everybody here is available 24/7. Nobody says, hang on a minute, it's not my start time yet, I'm not starting yet, or let's finish as early as possible before finish time. So you can see the compromise that happens with a consciousness like that of, you know, I don't want to do it, don't do it well enough, leave it, all of this. Everybody gives their best at any given moment in time. And equally, people who come, because they're not being charged, they come completely open. And so Brahma Baba was smart. He was really smart to say, okay, here we are, we're offering to you what we have that we feel is the best. Come and receive it. And so nobody then says, well, I paid you for this. I thought I was going to get this, but you didn't give me this. So I'm going to take you to court or give me my money back. Can't happen.
And we've had at these conferences and retreats, we've had very, very high level international management consultants, top strategy people. And we used to, a few years ago, when there were three senior brothers, there were two left now, but one was the accountant and lawyer for the Brahma Kumaris. And the three brothers would be talking and they would invite questions, and these big shots from New York said, well, where does the money come from? And they all just looked at each other and, well, you say that. No, you say. And the accountant, Ramesh Bhai, who ducked India when he graduated in tax and accounting at university, right? Pretty smart guy. He said, over here there's Bubba's boxes. And these management consultants, what do you mean there's Bubba's boxes? Well, you know, it's God's work, and they had no framework for such a big institution that was continually growing in India and internationally, it said, well, this is what we hope organisations will do. But they don't, because they don't. So people come inside the Brahma Kumaris, and you can go anywhere. You go into the kitchens, you go into the offices, you've seen the email rooms. What you see is what you get. And nothing's perfect, of course, but we do our very, very best to give you the experience of the magic that was handed down through Brahma Baba and that wonderful community from all those years ago.
I suppose really the consciousness that Brahma Baba instilled in everybody is that we're a family. We're a family. No matter how big we get, we're a family. And that's the consciousness with which even today, it has its challenges, I have to say, because as you get big, you get all sorts of people, and that principle has its challenges now that it's become so big. But nobody says, hang on a minute, we're going to have to strategize this and strategize that. We've got to stay a family.
On that point, we'll have to wind it up here. I'm sure you may have questions, but let's continue the questions, maybe over dinner or during the reflection groups. But I would like to introduce your host, Brother Charlie. Could you stand up and wave at everybody, please? Charlie and Dr. Nirmala. Charlie just arrived. He was giving a talk in eastern India, I think. Charlie's our old friend and brother, and was one of the very early students of the Brahma Kumaris in London, and now he's director of the Brahma Kumaris in Australia, and everybody's best mate. Everyone knows and loves Charlie, and he and Dr. Nirmala are the actual hosts of Peace of Mind. And so give us a wave, Charlie. So he's around for a few days and at the end of the retreat, so you get time to have a chat to Charlie. And so any questions you have also, he's part of the resource. I think that's it, sis.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah.
So on that note, a hearty Om Shanti. And just maybe during your meditation, for what we've shared with you, go back in time. Journey in your mind back to pre-partition India, a time of spiritual revolution and revolutionary change to create the Republic of India. And we're part of that revolution, that non-violent revolution, and we are all family. So along those thoughts, we'll thank you for your time. Om Shanti and Namaste.
Om Shanti.